Good evening, good afternoon, or morning, wherever you are in the world. Peace and love, peace and life, peace and blessings. If you are tuning in or listening to this, it will be pre-recorded by the next time someone listen to it, because I do not have any guests today. But this is the live session on January 7th. It is 4:45 p.m. Central Standard Time. Again, thanks for joining Born Intelligent, Rise and Heal. So, I wanted to do something different as far as the way that I check in. So, I'm going to start out with how I'm feeling. And this will be something that I'll be doing with guests as well, just to see where their spirit is and their heart, you know, and their energy, things like that. So I'm doing, okay. I'm doing really good in my spirit and in my energy, but I'm just so tired. I've been really tired lately. I think the meds that I'm on got me on a particular schedule. As far as like changing my appetite, I'm eating different, but I'm eating better. I'm eating more clean. I make sure of that because that's the utmost important thing for me. But as soon as after I take my meds, I'm sleepy. I go to sleep. But the thing about that is it's good for me because I get up really, really early to start my day. And this would allow me to, you know, engage in my meditation and my prayer. So it's not a bad thing. I just, when I want to be up, I can't be up because I'm so sleepy. So as far as that, I'm okay. And another thing, I just started my work week last week. So I prepare to go back tomorrow, but I started my work week and I believe that's why I'm so tired. I'm really anxious about things. I have a lot of different projects going on and I haven't really been invested in what I need to do towards my children's book and my other book, which I will be reading some pending excerpts from Trapped in Delusions for the program. But I've been really invested in, you know, getting this blog and my podcast off ground, just knowing how to invite people and inviting excerpts, or not excerpts, experts and professionals onto my podcast to speak about the subject matter of mental health, environmental mental health and psychology, different things like that. So yeah, but other than that, I'm feeling well. My heart, I feel good in my heart. I feel like I'm in a great space right now as far as my thinking. I'm really trying to work on myself and having a healthier mentality, a better attitude about things, the things that's around me. But checking, doing the inner self healing. To have more structure in my inner self, which is very important. And it's going good. I'm just anxious because I have a lot going on. And there's a lot of things that I want to do that's not really reachable yet. You know, it's not time, I guess. Anyway, so I will be quoting some different excerpts from two different books. One book is, of course, My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies by Resma Manikim. And the other book is called Toxic Communities, Environmental Racism, Industrial Pollution, and Residential Mobility by Dorketta E. Taylor. And both of these books, I'm sure you can get off Amazon if you like. But I thought it was very, very interesting reads because of the subject matter, what mental health are to better acquire a healthier mentality, just providing information and hopefully some useful tools that we can implement into our lives to start changing those things, you know, the way on what we need to change to better ourselves. I also will be sharing some pendant excerpts from myself that I post onto my blog. These are the unedited versions. This is in the workings, but I thought it was very conducive or intertwined rather with the subject matter of mental health. And I want to reiterate how we need to change the lingo instead of first, mental health is not, it's a cliche or it's treated as a cliche in the various communities. I think that it is overlooked and taken too lightly by professional people, by physicians who just believe in prescribing a medicine or prescribing medication to the person who is struggling with different challenges in their mentality and things like that. So this is a program just about presenting alternative methods on the things that we can do and just stressing the fact that we all have the ability, if we are in our right minds, which if you're having mental illnesses, you're probably not in your right mind, but we can follow common sense, and this is a common sense program. So first, let me read my disclaimer. I do not claim to be a mental health expert or no therapist that has the ability to heal people by profession. This blog is intended to deliver messages through book materials and share personal experiences for myself that could possibly help someone who needs to hear words of inspiration. This podcast, rather, is to uplift people and motivate people to educate ourselves. If you are suffering from mental illness, mental health, or extreme trauma, please contact or seek help from your local state. Okay, so I didn't really do any talking points now because I'm finding that, you know, I'm trying to just get a certain flow and momentum of things. So bear with me, you all. I did the podcast just like maybe an hour ago, and then I just made my dinner because it didn't work. So what had happened was is that my phone is having some issues. I'm having some issues with my battery. I think I have to get another charger, but I did the podcast, and then when I was trying to edit it, my phone turned off for some reason. And then not only that, I looked at the time. I'm timed. I only have an hour. And then, but I got off before the hour was up. But sometimes my phone just cut off. It's weird. So I'm going to try to do this in a manner of 40 minutes, no more than 45 minutes, just to be on the safe side. So this is a pendant excerpt written by myself, and I'm not going to read it all. I'm going to start from a certain space. And remember, this is unedited. If you want to read more, you can go to theverseplace.wordpress.com, and you can be able to read up on my articles. And some of this material that I'm going to read, well, all the material you can find on the blog, theverseplace.wordpress.com. That's what it is. Okay. So yeah, I'm going to start from the beginning. So these are mental health, my mental health series from pending excerpts. So, dehumanization of the African through colonization, forced ideological concepts on functional life, concepts of economic greed to build the new world, the implementations of applying a culture in the lives of ethnic groups who had no sentimental values or spiritual and cultural relevance, forced attachments, forced utilization, making up a system of slavery that was 100% intended to be used as property slash slaves were used as the American manufacturing machines for the New World, used as economic commodities, real estate, a diabolic system to benefit the very people who look different from them. Mental illnesses has been a generational struggle for American Africans or African Americans due to being stripped of everything we ever knew. Our spiritual practices were disregarded by the New World. Mental destabilization used as psychological warfare on the minds of many. And when I say many, I'm talking about generation after generation after generation. Continuing. The countless layers of the epidemics that interrupt one's healing in turn affecting our mental abilities to accurately interpret to begin the procession of healing has been dehumanized. My objective is to go back to revisit those areas of family brokenness where a series of pandemics has destabilized the consciousness of individuals. I believe mental health is misunderstood and has been swept under the rug by many who are victims themselves and who are afraid to investigate the subject of why so many non-clinical mental health illnesses are becoming clinical for failing to research, investigate, and study family historical trauma and genealogy. Mental health is unfortunately prevalent in Black and Brown communities who have dealt with mental illness, who are dealing with mental illnesses, and who have overcome mental illnesses. And a combination of articles, essays, transcribed interviews, and research on pre-colonial mental healing practices. The author is not an expert in mental healing or mental health. However, Amina has resided in an environment where the preconditions that gave rise to mental challenges set the tone, where her peers and some of her loved ones either fought mental challenges or who continue to suffer from mental illness. Also, ways in which fighting for healthy mental health is not encouraged by our lawmakers and policyholders. The issue of mass incarceration, which criminalizes mental health, invested itself in an entity intended to have direct mental and psychological effects primarily on inmates in Black and Brown families since the inception of private prisons in 1992. So I'm going to stop there. So that is I call it pending excerpt, but written by myself, that I want to let you know to look out for, as I continue to share things from my, upcoming books. This only encourages me to put it out there more. So this is a, speaking point that's very important in our children's generation. It is rare, W-A-R-E, that they are fortunate to know who their grandparents are. Either they have transitioned, the grandparents have transitioned, or due to continuous massive levels of generational trauma, maternal and paternal grandparents are living with trauma themselves that comes in forms of being over-medicated by way of addictive medications prescribed, substance abuse, poor dietary, psychological, and psychiatric dilemmas resulting in disconnectedness in the original family tree. So our children adapt or are adapted to accepting families outside of their own. Charity starts at home. These dilemmas has had an overflow of enclosures that has developed into lifestyles of accepting mediocrity and has been contributing unmanaged and unstabilized mental health. I spoke recently about changing the language or changing the wording of things, and I had a conversation with my mentor. And I used the term stabilized mental health or something dealing with stabilizing something. And she immediately corrected me. And she said, don't use that term. We should use reverse. And when I think of mental health, we have the power to reverse our mental health. Because, as I said, mental health is just a term that's out there, but it's not really identified. What is mental health, right? I think that mental health deals with this domino effect, because everything is cause and effect, even the way that we, you know, are not feeling well when we get sick. There's something that we're doing to cause the sickness. We just need to change what we're doing to reverse the matter. You know, so when I think of, again, mental health, mental illness, it's basically just simply put, just having a healthier mentality by thinking different, looking at things different, looking at other perspectives of things. Contributes to a healthier mentality, you know, in addition to eating the right things, eating clean, eating things that would not harm us, you know, doing a self-check, self-regulating, checking our habits, you know, working to change our habits. And I believe that mental health, or to have a healthier mentality, we have to change our lifestyles eventually. It's about doing things differently and even unlearning some of the things that we were told about what mental health is. It's just not, you know, taking medication, you know, and some of these medications, which I really, really believe that can feed the disease or whatever you're at uneasy about. It could feed that. It's like you could plant that. You can put a seed in a soil, which in turn is the soul, right? We spoke about the soul nerve last week, but it's like you can really grow something by feeding it, by giving it the energy. So we want to watch, you know, the things that we consume. Whether it's conversation, music, not just eat what we eat, what we allow into our spirit, et cetera, et cetera. And even how we spend our money, right? Because money, to me, I look at my money as my energy source, you know. So we have to watch what we choose to spend. You know, is it worth it? Are we investing in ourselves? Is it something that we need? Is it a necessity? It could be a liability. It could be a liability on your spirit, to where you're burdened. You're very burdened in your life, in your situations. So that's what I wanted to share. That was a speaking point because I'm big on genealogy, just tracing back, where you come from and to just visit those areas, whether it's reading or even traveling to those places, to see, you know, where you come from, where your family tree stems from. And to be quite honest, I hadn't did it yet. But I know there's a source called Ancestry.com, and I know many people who have done it. I traveled a lot, been out the country maybe 3 times, but my connection was telling me that I'm Senegalese, and I have yet to find that out, but I'm somewhere around the continent of West Africa somewhere. I don't know. I don't have any proof of that yet. I'm learning many things, and that's not my priority, but I do believe that tracing your genealogy is very, very important, and I think that it'll give us some understanding of why mental health has been so prevalent in people's lives for so long, for as long as I can remember. But it wasn't, I'm sure, like way back then, mental health was not looked upon as something as a concern, you know. But as time went by, more people are starting to wake up and see, wait, something is not right. What's going on here, you know? So that caused for people to, you know, do their homework, investigate, study history, study the history of people who conquered, you know, who genocided, committed genocide, who colonized, you know, those very people was struggling with mental health. Well, they thought it was normal, so that was just absolutely insane, you know. But yeah, it gets that deep, you know, and that's a whole nother like set of problems for like the children of those victimizers, the children of the oppressors, the great 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 grandchildren, right? In my children's generation, they're dealing with a whole nother level of mental illnesses. They're not dealing with no destabilization of mental health, dealing with economics, you know, because, you know, they were inherited money to, you know, for their survival needs. But just think of what they're dealing with on a psychological level. You know, the African American, we're dealing with both and more. You know, I mean, everything was taken away from us. So we have to start from zero in creating ourselves. We're under construction, right? We have to rebuild ourselves. And I believe that's what the Most High is doing, you know, is rebuilding the human being. And really, it's us doing it. The Most High have given us the tools, the capacity, the potential, the inspiration, the enlightenment, right, to be able to co-create so we can actually reverse this psychology, this psychological trauma, this mental health that we have been going through for so long. We can reverse it just by simply changing what you thought you knew, because it's not working. Changing your lifestyle, changing the way you eat, watching, you know, we don't want to be creating no GMO babies, you know. So, anyway, I digressed a little bit. So again, what I'm going to start with is My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies by Resma Minikin, which is a great book. Actually, I'm going to read from page 58, read like two paragraphs. And this is very, very insightful. I have yet to, I think it's somewhere in the library in the house, but a book, Dr. Joy Dr. Joy McGrew, or Gry, who speaks to post-traumatic slave syndrome. And she is a very renowned, wonderful, wonderful author. I hadn't read her book. I just saw skits of YouTube videos, and I read the books, you know, that I have read on African American history. I have saw one of her expressions or excerpts in that book, so I really admired her. So again, starting to read from page 58. I'm going to just read, this is the title. A really bad idea embraced by millions of people is still a really bad idea, by Tony Blauer. And the other one is I'm a get medieval. I'm a get medieval on your ass by Marcellus Wallace in Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction. So this was in a movie. So did I lose a page? No, I did not remember the page. Alrighty then, here we go. So while you're listening to the map, okay, here we go. So this book owes a great deal to Dr. Joy DeGore, author of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. In her groundbreaking work, DeGore traces the history of Black trauma in America. She looks in detail at the violence and abuse inflicted on enslaved African people in America, at the continued trauma inflicted on their descendants, and at how this trauma has been passed down and continues to be passed down through generation upon generation of African Americans. Post-traumatic slave syndrome explains how and why so many African Americans today continue to live in the shadow of this trauma. It also offers some useful initial steps towards healing. DeGore's book was published in 2005 when we knew considerably less than we do now about trauma as a bodily phenomenon. Back then, trauma was widely considered to be mostly mental and emotional. As a result, DeGore focuses primarily on the emotional and historical aspects of trauma. As we now know, however, without a clear and present focus on the body, trauma cannot be fully addressed. One of the purposes of My Grandmother's Hands is to build on DeGore's important work. Another purpose of it is to look a little further backward in time than DeGore did. Post-traumatic slave syndrome begins its investigations in the year 1619 when the first Africans arrived in America. These human beings were kidnapped, placed in chains, forcibly relocated, and sold into enslavement to immigrants from Europe and their descendants. However, trauma of this kind did not begin in 1619. For thousands of years before that, human beings murdered, butchered, tortured, oppressed, abused, conquered, enslaved, and colonized one another. While people from England, Spain, Portugal, France, Scotland, Sweden, and Holland had all colonized parts of America by the late 1600s. It was the English who controlled nearly all the colonized territories in what would become the United States in 1776. Now, I'm going to stop there because I want to really point out, but not getting deep into it, the transatlantic slave system, because this is what we're talking about, the transatlantic slave system, not preparing for slavery, not how they prepare to bring us over here, but the actual starting point of the transatlantic slave system, how we were dropped off everywhere in North America, in South America, just everywhere all over the world, you can find African people all over the world. So that's very important, and I'm not going to get into the dates, but yeah, it's true. And I spoke just a few minutes ago about the mental health of these people who thought that was they were being human, or they were being just structured and starting a new world or whatever. No, they did something very inhumane, creating these conditions that we call mental health, mental illness, the causation of what trauma is, you know. And it's important to mention how all of this, too, on a biological standpoint, standpoint is connected to the nervous system. You know, we just knew, when I say we, I'm talking about the African and the African American experience in America, how we were forced basically to live in survival mode. It was a crime to be human. It was a crime to be human. Until generations later, you know, when we thought this thing called slavery was over, and now we're in the 21st century, you know, where the our children and our grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera, think that this is the normal way. That this is to function this way, to function, to, you know, to survive, basically to live in, to not even live in, just surviving, that's normal. It's normal to over worry how you're going to do this, how you're going to pay this bill, how you're going to feed your children. That's not normal. And it's a lot to be said about that. But I just want to reiterate that, because that's very important. These conditions are not normal that we live in. And there needs to be a new way of thinking. And I just believe that, you know, focusing on your mental healing is the way to go. Because if you can't change as a person, how are you going to help your children? How are you going to help someone else? So there's a lot of things that we need to change. Now I'm going to transition into quoting from this book, Toxic Communities, Environmental Racism, Industrial Pollution, and Residential Mobility by Dorketta A. Taylor. And when you think of what environmental health is, that's what this book struck me as. And this book was very important, because it was actually a book that I needed for one of the class that I was taking as an African-American student through Merritt College, and ended up taking a different class, so I didn't no longer need the class. But I'm so happy I got this book because it's a great resource for me, a reference check, and etc., etc. So I wanted to I started reading it, but just scamming through it, I wanted to speak about this thing called ethnic churning, which is on page 85 of the book. Ethnic churning. So Pastor Saad and Hip, 2001, contend that ethnic churning can render communities more vulnerable to the sitting of hazardous facilities in their midst. The sitting of hazardous facilities in their midst. That is, ethnic churning reduces the ability of residents to resist the sitting of hazardous facilities. Ethnic churning is a particular type of residential sorting. It is the process by which one ethnic group replaces another in the demographic transitions that neighborhoods undergo. When racial and ethnic minority groups replace either whites or each other, that process weakens the social bonds, trust, and reciprocity that traditionally connected residents with each other. The replacement process might be accompanied by conflicts and heightened tensions. This makes it more challenging to organize such communities. Pastor and his colleagues found that ethnic churning in communities in Los Angeles County, whereby Hispanics replaced Blacks in neighborhoods, was associated with the increased sitting of TSDFs. So I'm going to pause there, but I'm going to continue to read the last paragraph. And I wanted to share with you guys what TSDF. I wanted to share that acronym with you all, because it's very important when we think about environmental, mental health, living conditions around hazardous environments with facilities and things like that right next to your residence.
So TDS. Uh-oh, what is it doing? Okay, let's be patient. Okay. Nope. Let's see, TDSF. Okay. So, no, oh. Okay, I need to redo it. TDSF. Wow, this was the initials meant something very important. That's weird because I read it earlier, but now it's not letting me get the meaning of it. Okay. TDSF. I need to write it down next time. Okay. So TDSF, which this in this book, toxic communities are toxic communities. In the beginning of the book, you speak more about what this is. Which just means total dissolved solids related to factor. No, that's not it. Why is it? This is crazy. Why Google be doing this stupid stuff? Let me see one more time. Then I'm going to have to refer. Go back to the beginning of the chapter if I don't find it. D. S. Okay, here we go. So TSDF is treatment, storage, and disposal facilities. Treatment, storage, and disposal facilities. And what I remember reading about this is that was it the government or the organization? It was a certain organization that dumped in a certain area. I forget the area, but they would dump the storage, like the waste, in these in certain areas, in certain waters. So they needed to get permission even from the I think the government or something, and the government allowed it to go on in this particular area. And then it went to the military, where the military had to intervene and told the organization that they could not dump in this area because it was a detrimental to the water. The fish and all of that were getting poisoned and dying. I mean, there were like hundreds upon hundreds of thousand fish that was dying. That was detrimental. The study of... is it Detroit and Flint? Yeah, in Flint, Michigan, that case of the water being lead in it when people were getting so sick. So it's a situation similar to that. And the governor at that time, I have to look this up, let it go on, you know. So there are people in high power that know about, or they're really aware, you know, very much aware about this waste management problem that we're having globally, and they're not doing anything about it. And then the sad thing about it is that they put, you know, you can't find these facilities in certain areas, in certain residential neighborhoods, where it's ideal to live, where it's clean, you know, where there's no liquor stores, no you know, no bad living, you know, things like that around us. It's only connected to where there is underdeveloped communities where you find these things, where it's a hazardous to your living, you know, things like that. So continuing to read, This thesis assumes that regardless of societal economic status, racially or ethnically homogeneous neighborhoods have greater ability to resist incursions from hazardous facilities than heterogeneous ones do. Now, I don't, that's interesting, but I looked up the homogeneous in the etymology dictionary because I connected it to these, speaking to specifically this sentence, it speaks to everybody other than indigenous people. I would say that because as I continue to read, you'll put it together. But the heterogeneous is connected to the so-called white man or white people. So they're saying it, you know, in just breaking it down in simplified terms, hopefully, that black and brown people have the are more capable of dealing with the hazardous environments more so than white people, basically. Okay, continuing. Saboto, Campbell, and Owens, 2007, provide some support for this thesis. In their study of Phoenix, they created a noise footprint using an integrated noise model. The researchers found that when they controlled for Hispanic ethnicity and income, areas with a high percentage of Spanish-only speakers had a lower likelihood of being impacted by airport noise. Campbell, Peck, and Scudi in 2010 also tested this thesis and found some support for the idea that increased homogeneity was associated with increased likelihood for collective action. So I'm gonna stop there. This is very interesting. So I was sharing along with this the importance of environmental health. Created a hashtag of environmental mental health and mental health matters, right? And I posted it and I've been getting, you know, I really don't like to do that. I'd rather have comments rather than likes. But just comment. But this post can be found on my social media, my Facebook and even my blog. But I wanted to just pinpoint how and we have homelessness so rapid in inner cities and underdeveloped communities that there are tent cities that are created because these people don't have nowhere to go. Either they're driven out of their houses, apartments, whatever, because, you know, they've been priced out, or, you know, they just, yeah, like I said the first time, they can't afford it, you know, so they choose to live on the street, you know, and this subsidized housing and Section 8 and all of that. I mean, that takes so long. It could take years to where, you know, you get discouraged. The wait is too long. In the meantime, where are you going to go? There are shelters out there, but most of the time, these shelters, you know, are they're not humanly engaging, or, you know, but people, you know, you're gonna do what you have to do, and there's things that, you know, you have to tolerate just people, but, you know, as long as you're not being harmed or anything like that, I don't see nothing wrong with going to a shelter temporarily. You know, but some people just don't want to get up and do it. You know, some people don't want to be bothered with other people because their mental health or their mental illness is so rapid that they just can't get along where they can't go through with the tasks, you know, because this creates anxiety for them, maybe, you know, stress, anything overwhelming or anything that's triggering can be just a word. You know, you can just ask someone something and then that can trigger them. You know, they get into fight or flight mode like quick. You know, so these things are not healthy. These are the conditions that was created. But then when you listen to people like Instructor Benjamin Bilal, Joe Dispenza, Daniel Amen, Bruce Lipton, and others, many, many others, you begin to know that, you know, you can actually reverse your genes, what you feed into your mind. And if you're programmed to like, you know, you're used to a certain way every day, you're used to negative talk, you're used to listening to certain type of music like 24 hours a day, you're used to negative self-talk. Some people are addicted to that, you know. And then just imagine this is your everyday program, and in addition to that, you don't have anything going for yourself. You have no aspirations to grow, to develop yourself or anything like that. So you're just surrounded or consumed by all of this negativity, this negative energy and darkness that in itself impacts the it destabilizes your mental health. And then you are just in a state of confusion, layers of confusion, because you don't know what to do, you know. So but the things that, you know, these professionals speaks about is absolutely true, because I am working on myself and reversing the genes as well. The genes it's about cause and effect. I always say that, but it creates certain proteins in a body, you know, that's detrimental. You know, I spoke about someone being in Zikr mode all day, and actually knowing someone who spent her time in a room as a ritual for 7 days just zikring. Zikring is remembering the Most High, or remembering God. And the important thing to know is that you have a family, you have responsibilities with yourself, you know, and that's a form of worship. That's a form of being a stand-up human when you take care of your personal responsibilities. We're not angels. We are human. We are not these outside entities. And I think you have to be careful what you tap into. You know, you have to be, because you can be, you know, dickering so much, you can go into a portal that's not welcome, or that does not invite human beings into. And then you can get psyched out of your mind. Next thing you know, you ain't never gonna be right again, because you entered into this portal where you was not invited, where you were not invited. You know, so I'm mentioning these experts because we have to start really uplifting ourselves by re-educating ourselves, because I believe that we were miseducated. And I think that mental health has attributed to that. We didn't never take this seriously. We wasn't taught to take care of ourselves. So this is about doing an remission of ourselves, of our spirits and our souls. And I'm big on just doing a self-check with yourself, self-regulate. We have to self-regulate. We have to do a self-analysis on ourselves. The Arabic term is called taqwa. And which is translated to me, it's one dimensional in the translation, but as meaning the fear of God. Well, it doesn't just mean
fear, like, oh my God, I see a monster. No, not fear like that, but being regardful and having respect for the Creator who made you, the Creator who has given everything to you that you have, whether you know it or acknowledge that or not. And also doing an inner evaluation of yourself, doing a, what term did I use? I'm big on terms. I'm big on changing the language because everything is language. So, doing like not, this is not an activity, but something, if you do these things, if you do a self-check, if you self-regulate, if you do self-evaluation, self-analysis of yourself, this will be an internalized structure for you to be able to have purpose, begin to have purpose. And also, I only have like 10 minutes left. So yeah, just do that self-check. That's very important to just check your temperature. Check your temperature, and I mean your spirit. Check to see where your spirit is within yourself. Protect your energy by just watching what you allow into your sacred space, the things you listen to, the things you eat, the advice that you take. And also the people that you allow to be in your space, because they might not be where you are. So you want to get, surround yourself with supportive people. And also I said, watch what you eat. Meditation and prayer. That's very, very important. That's the first thing that you need to do, which is a great ritual to do. And it don't matter like what religion you are or whatever. This is for everyone who are true humans. And also getting out to walk, which I have yet to start doing. I have to schedule that. Well, you know, I can actually go out and do it now because it's not absolutely dark outside. But yeah, getting that blood flowing. The blood needs movement. And that's very important. Cardio, do a walk run. That's what I do. I don't jog the whole way. I like walk maybe a few corners. The blocks are very huge. So I take my time, do a walk, and then I jog. And you know, I will do that. And then once I get back in the house, I feel a lot better. My head is clear. I can think. I could focus on, you know, think about the things that I need to do, right? So just, I believe that creating this momentum, just having a daily routine that helps you, that makes you feel good about your mental health. This is working, you know, on your healing. You can be able to heal better. And in addition to, as women, I want to say it's very important to go, you know, get a part of our self-care is taking care of ourselves, our nails, our hair. That's a part of my self-care. I know that I'm beautiful inside and out, so I don't do it for beauty. I don't do it for show. I'm not a person that go out at all, but I'm a loner type. That's something that I gotta work on, being more social around people or getting to know people. But my space is always sacred, and yeah, that's very important. But I have yet to, you know, socialize with others. But to be quite honest, I have been working on myself for a long time. I believe ever since I moved to a different state last year, I really had the chance to focus on myself. Because I had a lot of distractions and a whole lot of challenges that could have broke me. I could have been a broken person, but the wonderful thing about the Creator is that He gave us choice. He gave us choice to decide. We can elect you know, when you look at the term intellect, right? That word is elect. You're electing what you want to, what's best for you in your life. You're electing, you're choosing, start making a choice. So that's a beautiful thing. So those are my thoughts for today. And just, you know, choose wisely. Focus on your mental health, your self-care, and work on your healing. Okay, thank you for tuning in to Born Intelligent, Rising to Heal. Tune in next Sunday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you. Peace.